And there we are. Well, I was going to say, like, issue free, but I noticed we don't have a background.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's a minor one. We can live with that. Yeah.
Do you know? Oh, but like the framing us both. You mean?
Well, usually we have like a graphic in the background.
Gotcha.
We're tempting fate.
Yeah, really.
I mean, people know. They know what they're watching.
Yeah. You know who we are. Damn it.
Damn. You clicked the link when it came up.
Yeah. They're not gonna be like, "Who the hell is this? I don't see a background. I'm tuning out."
Yeah.
Oh, we already got to hydrate. All right. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Our audience contributing to our drinking problem. Thank you.
Yeah.
But let's actually start the show. what's going on, everybody? This is Big Dumb Monsters. We are joined tonight by a very special guest, returning guest. I think it was like your third time on Big Dumb Monsters.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think three.
We've done a bunch of shows across the years, like, I think we've been talking almost 10 years at this point, which is crazy.
Yeah, probably easily, yeah.
Yeah. Ken Reed is back to talk with us again. Back to talk another Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, you know I love it.
Yeah.
I have always been like a fan of the series Friday the 13th. I have never seen this one until yesterday.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Are there any others that you missed, or no, just this one?
I had not seen it. Just like, for some reason, I think it was on Showtime a lot. We always had HBO.
I just don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah, same here.
You're such a huge Corey Feldman head.
Well, I mean, I really, you know, I'm a fan of his music first, so yeah, a little behind on the movies.
Yeah.
No, I just had not seen this one, like, for some odd reason. And after watching it, like, I think this is one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, it's easily one of the best ones.
Yeah, I'm like, not, you know, don't get me wrong.
It's okay.
It's not a feat of cinema in any, you know,
for sure.
But like, when you think of Friday the 13th, this has got it all in it. It's got the hockey mask Jason.
Yeah.
It's got absolutely no story other than these kids go to.
That's not true. This one does have some good callbacks to the previous. It has some good continuity, and I will say this is the first one that feels like a Hollywood studio made it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Three was kind of there.
But the gimmicky. So, like, even the budget. Like, the budget on this one was $2.2 million.
Bad. Yeah. Yeah.
And the budget on the third one was $2.2 million, but a huge amount of that was due to the 3D. So, like, the first one, the budget was like $500,000. The second one, I think the budget was like $1 million. So, I mean, this is like double the budget of the first two. There's name actors in this one, aside from, you know, just having like a name cameo in the first one, essentially, as Pamela. But like, there are people who did things before Friday the 13th that are in this movie.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, I mean, we have a segment for this, but Julie Aronson is in, you know, Weird Science, one of like the biggest movies in the age. That's right.
Oh my god,
another giant of 80s.
Wait, was American Ninja the one with the multicolored ninja suits?
That's part three.
Okay. it's like watching Shinobi, you know?
Oh yeah, but weirdly, Joe Zito, who did this one. And stop me if I'm just going, ended up doing the rest of his career. I believe this was the last horror movie he made. And then after that, it was just violent canon action movies. Speaking of American Ninja. Like
Chuck Norris movies.
Sick.
Yeah. Red Scorpion. He put his morals aside and worked in South Africa to make Red Scorpion.
During he will play Thug City, damn it. but no, I was saying, like, this has all the elements of what you're thinking of, I think, when you think of Friday the 13th. Like,
yeah.
To me, also, the remake, the one they did, like, in 2008 or 9.
It's great.
It seems a lot like this one. Like, it's not shot for shot the same, but it, like, basic premise. Oh,
it took a lot of inspiration from this one.
Yeah.
Because the remake is essentially a condensed remake of the first three and a half movies, because it doesn't have the Jarvis sort of kid element, but everything else, it just takes the highlights of the first three movies and sort of wraps it into this package. And yeah, you get a condensed version of the first four movies.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they did that, but they didn't do it in a like a shitty way where they're like, hey, you remember this? Hey, you remember this? Like, it felt like its own thing.
Yeah.
Then this one is cool because it also feels like its own thing, right? Like, it's still following the beats of a Friday the 13th movie, but you're getting something a little bit different this time. It's not like drastically different, I don't think. But you're getting like decent acting. You're unfortunately getting Crispin Glover dancing,
which is always unfortunate.
Scariest thing in the flick.
It really is. Like, and it really wasn't until I watched it last night that I realized, like, I don't care for Crispin Glover.
No, he's got a very weird energy. Although I will say it works very well in Wild at Heart.
Yeah, like where he's allowed to be weird and the movie is weird, it's fine.
I was going to say, he's like that guy you knew like around like college age or maybe late high school. It was always like trying on a personality at a party, especially. And it's just like, oh, God, this guy again. Like, that's pretty much what I get, the vibe I get from him.
Have you ever seen the music video that he did?
Oh, no, I have not.
Oh, yeah, it's weird. It's like carnival music, but with like a spoken word thing over top of it. You can tell that like right before he did this, he was like going through a crazy Mr. Bungle phase.
He also directed a series of movies where I think all the actors have Down syndrome.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I think it's a trilogy of movies that he made.
Okay.
Weird guy. I mean, he's of course famously known for almost kicking David Letterman's head off. The Tonight Show.
That was fun.
Late night.
Yeah.
But I believe him as a weird, horny teenager on the spectrum.
Yes.
Yeah. A la River's Edge, you know.
Yeah. Like, it's probably because that's exactly what he was at this point. I think he was like 9 years old when he did this.
I love that he's hung up on the fact that the one guy called him a dead fuck.
Yeah. it got real annoying by the end, though.
Yeah. He spends like half the movie just complaining. He's just a dead fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's unlikable. I mean, it manages to, like, most of the teenage characters in the Friday the 13th movies, you don't care that they're murdered. And he is right in there with those people who you're like, meh.
Yeah. Like, even in this one, like, you kind of don't even care about the final girl because she's making awful, irresponsible decisions. Like, she's like, no, young brother, you stay here. I'm going to go with the guy that I like and investigate things.
Yeah.
While but there's a teenager would do that, to be honest with you.
I like to think I would watch out for my little brother a little more than that.
You'd like to think.
I'd like to think. I don't know that for sure.
You think that now as and I apologize if this isn't true, middle-aged man who does not have teenage hormones raging through your veins.
It's true.
But I like this one. It feels the most like a movie. And what I mean is like the first one still has that vestigial porno kind of grow because I mean Sean Cunningham, porno director, he made the first movie for a mob company who made porn movies based out of Boston. Hallmark Pictures were mafia guys. They still produce this one, but Paramount had been involved for three movies by now, and they had Frank Mancuso Jr., who was now the executive producer. He started as a PA, I think, on the second one, and then he was a producer on the third one. But this one, he's now like a big executive, and this is a studio picture. And he legitimately wanted to end the series with this movie because he was like, now this movie's an albatross around me. I want to go produce other movies, and let's do a real movie and end it. You know, I know he did Back to the Beach in 1987, which I'm very grateful for, but I don't know if he really ever lived down the Friday the 13th movies.
I when I was a kid, it had to be 87. They had like a big promotion for Back to the Beach at the now defunct Northway Mall.
Yeah.
And I just remember we were driving, like my mom was driving us somewhere and like we were driving by and there was like a giant like flatbed trailer with like girls in bikinis and like people like doing like a beach like party dance and like they were giving out. What's that?
It's a dream come true.
Yeah. I had a Back to the Beach poster on my wall for like a good chunk of my childhood.
I still do. I have a framed Back to the Beach poster. I love Back to the Beach, I should mention.
I've never seen it.
It's great. It's funny. It's one of the first like self-reflective sort of it's not ironic, but it's like lovingly making fun of 60s beach party movies with
self-aware
from those movies. Yeah. But also is like very sort of heartwarming and fun, and it's just a fun movie. And so I loved it when I saw it in the theater. I have copies of the soundtrack, I have the poster, I have all this memorabilia from it. But when Annette Funicello passed away, they auctioned off a bunch of stuff from her estate to benefit MS, I think. And I have all of her Back to the Beach stuff.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It's like, what the fuck is his name? Why am I blanking on his name? The guy that was living in OJ's pool house.
Cato Kaelin,
like the kind of movies that he would make.
This is a big studio. It's a big Paramount studio picture, and it had a ton of names and a ton of cameos. And there's some really funny jokes.
Jimmy Herman.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Doing Surf and Bird. You got Stevie Ray Vaughan and Dick Dale doing a version of Pipeline together. It's the soundtrack's great. Fishbone's in it.
No shit.
Yeah, we get free passes to see it because of that flatbed truck.
I guess cocaine is probably responsible for a lot of that, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, Frank Mancuso Jr., the movie producer.
That just sounds like the name of a Grand Theft Auto boss.
Yeah. He sounds the most mob affiliated out of all the producers of Friday the 13th, and ironically is probably the least mob affiliated out of all the producers from Friday the 13th. And even those mob producers, who I think both of them just passed away recently in their 90s here in Boston, they used to own all the grindhouse theaters in our combat zone, which was like our 42nd Street Times Square. And they had a company called Hallmark Pictures, which I might have talked about this last time. But Hallmark were the ones who came up with the keep repeating it's only a movie. They produced the U.S. release of Mark of the Devil with the vomit bags. That was them. You know, Last House on the Left. They released a lot of Italian movies, believe it or not. But including a lot of Mario Bava movies, including Twitch of the Death Nerve, which one of the producers basically would get on the phone with Cunningham and be like, here's what you're going to put in a movie, this thing. And that's why you get those like ripoff deaths from Twitch of the Death Nerve with like the spear through two of them and like shot for shot. So I think I believe Sean Cunningham when he's like, I've never seen that movie, and I'm sure he hadn't, but you got some producer in Boston being like, I got a good idea. You know, it's totally 100% totally mine.
Never been done before.
Yeah, so it's, you know, this movie was sort of the transition away from the mob guys a little bit and into Paramount, although then they took a giant step back with Part 5, literally hiring a porno director.
Yeah.
And it was so sleazy, but that's a whole other story.
I mean, you know, people want to transition out of that scene. You know, you got to give
the gateway,
give them a chance. A horror, well, that's the thing, is like sex and horror, like, they just go together. I don't know why.
If you work for the BBFC.
The big what?
The British Board of Film Classification.
Oh yeah. Oh God, we got to hydrate again.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you get, you know, you have a child protagonist, which is unusual in a horror movie in this era, which was intentional. Savini came back, but only because they told him this was the final one. They really planned to make this the final one. Yeah. You know, and you don't have quite zombie Jason yet, but, you know, to your point, it is the Jason we all know. He's got the hockey mask from Go. He's semi-undead, even though there's like there's like a 10-minute almost remake / tribute of Halloween 2 in the middle of this movie.
I do... Like going to the Jason in this movie, this is one of my favorite versions of him, where he's like big and bulky, but he's not that like mutant monster that we all know from the later movies. he's still got like, there's like a shred of humanity left.
Enough so that he gets distracted by like, you know, Tommy, you know, doing the child Jason thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's a confused, crazy lunatic.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not just a monster yet. And
right.
And it's cool. We're like right on the cusp though, because like, yes, he's coming back from the dead and like none of that ever really gets explained.
Yeah.
Well, you could be like, well, he didn't really get fully killed the last day, like mistakenly thought he was dead. Like you can sort of write it off.
Yeah.
He doesn't have worms in his eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
Thor pointed out that Ted White wanted to kill Corey Feldman.
In real life?
Probably. Corey Feldman does look like a miniature John Denver for a good portion.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he, again, great weirdo kid actor, and you believe that this weird little kid would be all into, you know, horror special effects and that kind of stuff. Like, he basically wrote your average Fangoria reader into the movie.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I like Corey Feldman when he was a kid.
He's a great actor.
Great.
Yeah, he's in some great movies.
He's just horribly damaged at this point. And
because of those great movies.
Yeah. Well,
because Charlie Sheen sexually assaulted him.
Yeah, that helps. That definitely helps.
That'll do it.
No, that was Corey Haim. That was Corey Haim he supposedly did.
Oh, no, it was Feldman as well.
Oh, as well?
Oh, yes.
Did you watch the Charlie Sheen documentary?
I had no interest in that. That guy is a real piece of shit.
Yes. Asterisk. It's entertaining. He weirdly gets a redemption arc. Like, he goes into like, hey, I know I was a giant piece of shit and I sometimes still am, but like, he's like trying to
be a good person, put up the front of a good
person. Yeah. Sure. I mean, no, I can only go so far with that redemption when you're like, you know, sexually assaulted kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My tolerance is low.
There's also like a Feldman documentary. I don't know if it's out yet or if he's trying to get it out. And apparently that's another like interesting ride of a watch.
I bet.
He's one of the only people who ever asked me to get paid to be on my podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I would happily pay guests if I made any money.
Yeah, I was going to say, so he wasn't on the podcast, huh?
No. And I assume most people know it is not the norm to get paid for podcasts.
No.
Yeah.
You do it for the love of the game.
That's right.
Let's see, what else can we say about this?
So there's a few interesting things about this movie to me that I actually find. So one thing is, and I think I might have talked about this in Jason Takes Manhattan, the Friday the 13th timeline, from episode or the fifth movie onward technically takes place in the future. So
yeah, Tommy does become an adult through the course of one movie, which is a year in real time.
Yeah. I think part seven canonically takes place in about 1998, even though it came out in 89 or 88 or something. So like Jason Takes Manhattan, if you follow the timeline, it's like people have done much better summaries of this than I can, but it takes place in like 2003. So this one, there's a 4-year gap, I think, between the first three, because the first three take place over for like 4 days. It's supposed to be like 4 days. Yeah. This one is 3 years later. So this one is set in 84, shot in 84, takes place in 84. But that's why the next one jumps like 10 years or something, because Jarvis is now a teenager and then he's an adult in six. So we're like in the mid 90s by the time we're in part six.
Yeah.
So this one's not the future yet. But you get a lot of really cool things that I've never seen in a horror sequel before, like the brother who's trying to avenge his sister's murder, where that's kind of a very interesting angle because you never see these cannon fodder teenagers who get murdered as anything else. They're not real people. You don't talk about how devastated their families are that they got murdered. Like, that's it. It's like the thing Lynch was going for with Twin Peaks, where he was tired of seeing, you know, these girls murdered and things and people just move on. It's like, no, so like, if you know somebody who's murdered, like that affects their, like their whole family forever, their commute, like it's a huge loss. And yes. So to have that even touched upon here with her brother is really interesting.
Yeah. And like when I loved these movies when I was a kid, like every horror nut kid did, right? Until I was an adult, I didn't realize that there were through lines in any of these movies.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that there were recurring characters. I didn't realize that there were callbacks to other things. Like, it's, for me, it was just like, okay, that guy got killed in this gruesome way. That's rad. Let's move on. And then, you know, as I got older, I was like actually paying attention to what happens in the movie. I'm like, oh shit. Tommy Jarvis is in three of these fucking movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that dawned on me when The Game came out, the one like not that long ago, like where Tommy Jarvis is one of the characters. I'm like,
yeah, he can save you. He can come in and save you. But it's like that, it's the Tom what's his name version of him from part six. The older
one. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's and then there's that disturbing scene where the brother gets killed and he's saying like he's killing me.
That is the realest scene, like no bullshit. That is the realest shit that has ever been.
It's haunting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like if you go down the, you know, black hole of the internet and see videos of people being like fucking killed and shit, like that's how they react. Like they say shit like that.
And Zito put that in there on purpose because around that time was that famous case of that woman in New York who was being murdered in like a building and no one did anything. Zito's an interesting director. I don't know how deeply you've gone into Zito's filmography, but like right before this, he did The Prowler, which is one of the better slasher movies of the 80s. And it weirdly takes place on my birthday. Like the day and date of my birthday, June 28th, 1980 is when that movie's set. But it has a weird element to it that he was very good at shooting this kind of thing in like a stylized way while still being sort of brutal and not as sleazy as it can be and not too stylized where it's like seems cartoonish or something. He had a very good knack for that. He told a funny story where he went to go see The Prowler on 42nd Street and he got in for free. He told the guy, it's like, I made this movie or whatever. So they let him in. And after the movie was over, the usher came up to him and he goes, did you really kill those people? He's like, what? No, he's like, it's okay if you did, but you really killed those people though, right? He's like, no, I didn't.
No. Yeah, it's that point between like, I don't know, like Dario Argento when you've got just, it's all style.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like Maniac where it's all grit, you know, like there's a sweet spot.
And he hits that perfect here. I think that's like the perfect sort of slasher. You know, Halloween is that where, you know, it's got the style and the horror of it, but it's not like sleaze. And yeah, it's not so far removed that it's this beautiful shot that you're admiring before you even realize what you just watched, you know, someone spraying all their entire body worth of blood over like a white sheet, you know, and you're like, it's not the same thing.
That opening kill in Suspiria is probably like the most gorgeous death anybody's ever had.
Yeah. Or even in Tenebrae, like when Argento was hitting it, man, he was shooting some amazing looking stuff.
You didn't even realize the violence you were looking at.
No. And it's funny because that all comes from Mario Bava. Like the stuff that Mario Bava used to shoot was absolutely beautiful. Like, you know, Blood and Black Lace, it looks amazing, and he kind of invented the giallo stuff. And it's funny seeing that come around and then again, because obviously that influenced Friday the 13th way more than anything else. And then you see, you know, it sort of starts influencing the influenced genre, and you get this weird sort of perpetual spiral of all this stuff.
Ouroboros.
But I like this one. I don't like my slasher in horror movies generally, but especially slashers, to have too much lore. I don't want the killer. I don't want his backstory. I don't want to know that there's like some demon possessed him or his dad was a Satanist. Like, I don't care. That's not what I want. That's why Halloween is brilliant, because there's no reason for
it. You can get there through the sequels, but like if you're introducing the character, yeah, just give me the menace.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's harder to do that because you need to make the characters interesting that are in danger, that you care about them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, who cares? Then you just go to see everybody killed. And I feel like this has a good mixture of sympathetic characters, annoying characters, and sort of in the middle. You know, they're not just there to be killed kind of characters.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, the most annoying thing about this movie is
Crispin Glover.
No, it's actually not Crispin Glover. It's like the guy that called him a dead fuck. I can't remember.
Oh, the guy from The Last American Virgin who gets killed in the projector thing.
Yeah. He's the worst.
Yeah, he is. He's annoying as hell.
His old timey porno guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of the weed he has is apparently in roaches.
I only brought roaches.
Over. Yeah. He emptied his ashtray into a bag and brought that. And then he's just the, like, the most obnoxious character that you can have.
Yeah.
If you want to see that guy suffer, watch The Last American Virgin, because it is a brutal movie. Have you ever seen that film?
I have not.
No.
It's Canon Pictures. It's a remake of a sort of semi-autobiographical Menachem Golan story that he made in Israel. They made these movies called Lemon Popsicle that were a little bit like Porky's. And this is an 80s American remake of it. And you watch the trailer and it's like wacky teenage hijinks, you know, like, oh, we're trying to get laid and the cars are playing. But when you watch the movie, these kids get crabs from a prostitute. There's like three abortions. There's a scene where Diane Franklin is getting an abortion and the doctor's about to start. And then they cut to that kid cutting a pizza. He's like a pizza delivery boy. And then at the end, there's like no happy ending. It is.
That sounds grim.
It is so grim. And there's just like, there's so many stories of people I know who are older than us that went to go see that as like a wacky teenage comedy. It's like they took those elements in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and just cranked it up all the way. It's similar to kids' stories of when they went to see the Transformers movie and then watched all their favorite Transformers get slaughtered.
You know, this comedy only has one abortion in it.
Yeah. Oh, it is brutal. Brutal. And then you have the guy who was in The Powers of Matthew Starr in this. He was a big TV star at this time and had already been in Hell Night, I think.
Yes, that was before this, I believe. And doing my research, I noticed that. Yeah, he was apparently in this. It was like a Starman type of character, but like a TV show for kids.
Ew.
Yeah, Matthew Starr.
Powers of Matthew Starr, yeah.
That's what it was, yeah. And he's like the prince of the universe or something. It's it looks wild.
Hell Knight's a great movie if you've never seen Hell Knight.
I don't think I have.
Hell Knight.
Speaking of Repossessed, it's Linda Blair, and it's about these college kids on Halloween that throw a costume party in like this abandoned mansion, and they, you know, people start getting killed, and it's really atmospheric and good. It's well done. It's very well done.
I feel like the Hell Knight is very familiar as
sounds
a title.
Like Night of the Demons. Like,
no, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's a Michael Graves era Misfits song.
Oh. Oh, the Misfits cover band.
Yeah, I love it. They lean into the cartoon of it.
Yeah,
it's Michael Graves is who Michael Graves is now.
He's
proud and he's a boy.
He certainly is. What a loser. Man,
yeah.
I think I mentioned this last time, but he did block me on Twitter when I pointed out he was in a Misfits cover band that had some members of the Misfits in it.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
The list of people who have blocked, like people who are associated with or have been on this show, is quite interesting because Frank Stallone has blocked Tom on Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, I've been off Twitter for like 2 years since it went full Nazi, but I racked up quite a list of people who had very publicly blocked me.
You're like proud of it, right? Because it's like, I did that. Yeah. They know who I am.
Chuck Woolery. That was a good one. Scott Baio.
Yeah.
All the Trump children.
Scott Baio?
Yeah, piece of shit. Yeah, I think I said to him, I was like, I don't think you're an asshole because you voted for Trump. I think you voted for Trump because you're an asshole.
Fair. That's the one that sent him over the edge.
Yeah. Yep. Joni does not love Chachi.
Yeah.
But this movie used to air in Boston often. So we had a thing called the Movie Loft here, which was not like a horror host show. It was this guy, Dana Hersey, who also blocked me, who was like a big guy with a big radio voice. And actually, Billy West, who's from Boston, when he does his announcer voice that she calls his big dumb announcer voice, which you'd hear him do on like Ren and Stimpy, you know, I'm the announcer kind of voice, he's doing Dana Hersey. Like, that's the guy he's doing an impersonation of. But Dana Hersey used to host a show called the Movie Loft here. And they showed movies on our UHF station, TV 38, pretty much every night. And every month they'd end up showing at least two Friday the 13th movies for some reason. And this one and part three constantly. Three and four were just like, at least once a month we're on.
Yeah.
We used to get WSPK here when I was a kid. So yeah, I'm familiar with Dana Hersey and the Movie Loft.
Yeah. I really miss the Friday the 13th marathons that used to be on cable on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I will say this too. It's very different, but I love the series.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. The TV series. I mean, it's not the series of movies. The series when I was a kid, but I have not seen it since then. So I remember liking it when I was a kid, but it has nothing to do with like Jason Voorhees.
It's like an anthology Twilight Zone.
It's kind like of thing, Needful right? Things.
Sort of. It's basically Needful Things. Yeah, it's sort of, it's produced by Frank Mancuso Jr. Mancuso Jr. again.
Hey.
So he had the name. But it's about these two cousins who their uncle had owned an antique shop, and he made a deal with the devil, and all of the antiques are cursed, and they got sold after he died. So they have to go out and sort of hunt these all down. So each episode's like a different cursed antique. But like David Cronenberg directed a really amazing episode. There's some really good episodes of that show that are just very sad or like well done or disturbing. And there was always a rumor that was never even in consideration where people were like, one of the objects is the hockey mask. They gotta go hunt them. Like, no. But the main guy from the series ended up being the main guy in Jason Goes to Hell.
Okay.
Okay.
Not playing the same character.
Yeah.
That's a garbage movie. That is unwatchable. I tried to rewatch that last year and I'm like, this is so awful.
Jason Goes to Hell?
Awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even entertaining awful.
I think I've only seen it like once or twice and it's like, yeah, I'm good.
I think I've seen it twice. Yeah. I saw it once when it was like fairly new. I think I rented it and then I saw it again when I was going through the series. I was like, I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I honestly feel like you could end the series at part six and it's satisfying.
Terry Kaiser's in seven, right? It's the psychic one, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Bernie's being a real dickhead in that one. Yeah. Seven has some interesting stuff. Eight, as we mentioned, is pretty terrible and a really bad topper. Eight isn't as awful if it was like in the middle somewhere, like say before seven.
Yeah.
But as like a finale, it's really terrible. Five is, it's five is such a sleazy porno movie. Five feels like a 70s movie in all ways. Yeah. And
like possessing people or something like that. Like, or there's a serial killer. Like, cause I remember like the.
In part five?
Yeah.
No, it's a guy who was an ambulance driver who is actually one of the ambulance drivers who took Jason's body to the hospital in part four. And some juvenile delinquent kids in like a juvie school kill his son. And so he becomes like, he pretends to be Jason to murder all these kids.
Yeah. Now I just remember like this scene where like the one like delinquent, like murders the fat guy eating the chocolate bar.
With
like,
an axe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could make a pretty good super edit of people in Friday the 13th movies being killed while eating things.
Oh, yeah.
Like this lady with the banana.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
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 I like, for me, like once a story starts doing like the, this is a person possessed by the spirit of that killer or the psychic angle or like the like telepathic link thing, like I'm out. Like,
yeah, it's magic.
Like all like these big, you know, action movies have like a logical ending where you cannot beat, like you can only get like a villain so big before like they can't be beat. So usually like, when an action series is waning, the second to last movie is them fighting the devil. And then the last movie is them fighting themselves.
Yeah. And they are the devil.
Yeah. And or, like, but Schwarzenegger does this perfectly because he has End of Days, and then the next movie is The Sixth Day, where he fights the devil and then himself. Yeah.
End of Days has one of my favorite bad writing pieces ever, where he's trying to find this girl who is the I think she's the descendant of Jesus or something. And he goes, he's trying to find her, and they're like, how do we know who this girl is? He goes, she's in New York. Jesus Christ in New York. Christina York. And that's her name. And they're like, oh, let me look up Christina York. And
no.
Like, Christ in New York. Christina York. And I'm like, this, who said this was okay.
I always remember loving the vibe of that movie, though. Like,
it's silly. It's fun to see. Is it Gabriel Byrne like, that's the devil?
Thematically. I love like a religious like apocalypse incoming kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like, Stigmata, like, the prophecy.
Stigmata was great. Yeah. Constantine. Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Constantine's underrated. It's I love the comic. I'm a huge Hellblazer fan and I love that character. The movie's not a great adaptation of that character, but on its own is a pretty great movie.
The fucking show was awesome.
Yeah, the show was good. The most disappointing thing about the show was all the little seeds they planted for characters that would be on it later if the show continued, like the Spectre and Swamp Thing. And I'm like, oh, this would have been so good. And it just didn't. Yeah. It was weird that it was on a network. I think it was on ABC or something like that, or NBC. It was on like one of the big three networks.
It was on NBC.
NBC, yeah.
Yeah.
Which it did not fit on at all.
No.
No. But it was so fucking good.
Liked that one season Swamp Thing show they did.
Yeah,
That was
the HBO one.
Yeah, no, it was
not HBO.
Was on one of the streamers.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
I don't think Constantine was on NBC. I think Constantine was on CW.
No, the first season was on NBC.
NBC. They brought him into the CW, that character in like the Heroes of Tomorrow or whatever. Later, they brought him back.
He would show up in a couple of the Arrowverse shows.
I thought he was on the same fucking channel.
No,
it would make sense to put it in there because that show would have worked better in like Supernatural, right? Like that's the network that should be on. Yeah. But it cost a lot of money. It was on a major network, and obviously they weren't gonna if that wasn't a hit out of the gate, they're not. They're like, we didn't even want this here. It should have been on the CW or something like that. The Swamp Thing show was cool because, again, it teased Blue Devil and like all these other cool characters. I will say I have some insider information about James Gunn's plans for the DC Cinematic Universe.
Oh, all right.
If he makes this work, which I'll be surprised if they let him go far enough to get this to work, essentially the plan is to sort of have an aliens versus Earth kind of thing, and by Earth that's like the magic characters, so like Swamp Thing, who's like the Keeper of the Green, and Constantine and all the sort of Justice League dark characters, and by aliens it's like Thanagarians and Kryptonians, and the Green Lantern Corps is sort of split in the middle because they're basically an alien police force, but they have some Earthlings in it. So that's the kind of big conflict, which I think makes sense, because one of my huge complaints with especially the Marvel movies is if you have a superhero thing and you base it in science fiction, cool. Once you start introducing magic, garbage. You can have a magic-based thing, you can have a science-based thing, but once you try to have both, it makes both seem stupid, right? which is kind of what we were saying before with, like, you get a psychic, you got a demon in the slasher movie. Like, it just starts being silly. And I think that that plan is the one way where I feel like those two things can work together.
Yeah, well, because it's never-ending power ramping.
Yeah.
So, like you know, your magic guys are going to figure out a way to cancel the technology of the sci-fi guys. Or the sci-fi guys are going to figure out a way to block the magic of them. And it's just, like, one-upping each other every time. Well, it's
also, like, possibility limiting. When you start out with science, you think, okay, this is going to be a fact-based world. Like, you know, this is what makes up this world. Like, there's a set of rules. These can't be broken. And then when you introduce magic to that, it's like, well, fuck the rules. We can just, anytime we need to get around them, it's magic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the magic can have its own rules, but then the science, like, it doesn't, it makes a, it, it breaks down the believability of the universe you've created.
Yeah. Whereas if you start off with the magic, it's like, well, the science is trying to figure out the magic, basically.
Yeah.
Which is exactly when the Friday the 13th movies fall apart, because you have, once you have a psychic, you have Carrie, basically. It's you know, Jason versus Carrie. And I'm like, this is stupid. He's also a zombie now. Now, this is also kind of a different thing. And then by the time you get to the New Line movies, I mean, they're basically fan fiction.
He's a space, you know, zombie now.
Yeah.
Which is silly. I mean, that's fun and dumb, but that movie doesn't have... The problem I have with movies like that is they have no stakes to me. They're just like a very superficial, like, all right, this is fun and dumb. Which, if you compare it to something like Part 4, there's actual characters in here. You know, you feel like Corey Feldman's a real kid. You're worried for him. You're like, he might get killed by this monster. You can imagine yourself being in a cabin in the woods in the summer, and it's very quiet and scary. But once you have Jason with nanobots and, you know, a sex bot whose nipples are falling off fighting him, like, then it's just like, oh, this is entertaining, but it doesn't have, like, any, like, character weight or stakes or, like, suspense to it. You know, you're not worried for the characters.
Yeah. It's all flavor, no nutrients.
Yeah. Sounds silly to say when you're talking about a Friday the 13th movie, but it's really, like, you know, in comparison.
That's what makes the slasher aspect of it worth it. You know, like, yes, it's a dude in the woods killing teenagers, but you're supposed to feel something for those teenagers. You're supposed to be, you know, shocked when he kills them. And, you know, gradually over time, you know, especially in, like, Jason X, where it's just, it's a best of compilation.
Yeah. It's pro wrestling at that point, you know?
Like, you just don't care. Like, you don't care that he's killing these people. You just are interested in, like, how grisly is it going to be? Or, like, how rad is that kill going to be?
Right.
The characters are nothing. They're fluff.
And even you could get by on that one when effects were practical, because you were there for the magic trick to see how they pull it off. But then once you get to that level and it's all CG, then you have nothing to look at. You're like, I'm not impressed by the special effect or how they made this thing, this magic trick of this murder look, because they just use CG. I don't care about that character. It's like, why are we here?
You know what I mean? It's like they lower the bar.
Yeah. And I also feel like, and this is Mike, I'm just complaining. I'm sorry, I'm using your show to just complain the whole time.
It's fine. That's what we do all the time.
But, like, one of the things I hate, and I think ruins a lot of stories, is I love comic books. I'm a lifelong comic book reader. I'm the person I am today because I read Marvel Comics growing up. Like, I think it made us better people reading 70s Marvel Comics. They were very black and white, very right and wrong. And Stuart Lee, the comedian, recently pointed out that he thinks that as well. And he's like, look, I was reading these comics written by, you know, Jewish World War II vets and hippies who did a lot of drugs, who were all about making the world better and, you know, what's right and wrong. You know, I'm like, perfect. But for a movie especially, where you're telling one story, which a movie should do, it should tell a story that's self-contained. It can have pieces or allusions to other things, but I don't want to see a movie that goes to be continued, or that you have to see four other things to understand what's going on. Like, I don't want that. But for a movie to sort of be self-contained and work, when there's an element like a supernatural element or you know, a science fiction element, that kind of has to be the only one of those in it, right? So like when you mix Freddy and Jason, now you have two, you have this world with two completely different supernatural characters that it's just silly. Yeah. It's completely silly at that point. Like with Watchmen, which I obviously loved the Watchmen comic and the Watchmen TV series, but the Zack Snyder movie is complete garbage. And the problem is he completely misses the point of the comic, which is you have this world where there's actually only one person with superpowers, and it's Dr. Manhattan, and he's terrifying because he's inhuman and he actually has super, he's like a god and no one else is like that. It messes with everything in the world. And that's the point. When you have everybody, like just trying to intertwine all these Marvel characters together, there's no stakes now. Like if Daredevil's fighting criminals in Hell's Kitchen and all of a sudden Captain America and a Greek god shows up and you know, an alien and a magician, like now I'm like, well, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, that's why the Daredevil show is so good.
It's level crap. They tried to kind of do that with Thor, like give him the Dr. Manhattan treatment at the beginning of the MCU, but then they just kind of fucking threw it out the window.
Yeah.
Where like he was the only one who was like a god, who is an actual god, who has all these powers. And then they just kind of let that story like go by the wayside.
Yeah. Well, or like, cool. Like in his movie, have him be all, you know, he's among the gods. That's the world he lives in, you know, fine. Yeah. But now you're adding like, oh, here's an alien here. And now that like, I'm like, what's this doesn't, you can't mix all these things.
Yeah. I wanted to point this out. TJ said the Swamp Thing. I've been waiting on this for like a couple minutes. The Swamp Thing show was on the forgotten DC streamer.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's good. It looked right.
I don't remember
what it moved a little bit too slow. I think that was the only complaint.
Yeah.
And why?
Well, I mean, the look of it was incredible. That's why it got canceled, because it was too expensive to keep the sets like stored in between the seasons.
Oh yeah,
they had this big like, you know, sound stage that held like a million gallons of water or something for this giant swamp.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was too expensive, so they had to get rid of it.
Which ironically, the opposite. Film of the National Swamp. I know, film the National Swamp. That's what they did with the Wes Craven one. The irony of the terrible USA Network Swamp Thing show that should not have continued to go on, neither should the Superboy show. But the only reason they kept going on was because they shot them at Universal Studios Florida and they needed something to shoot when they took people on tours to be like, right here, they're shooting the Superboy show or a Swamp Thing. So they needed, because they had standing sets for those things, literally just for amusement park tour people. Those shows went on for like 9 seasons.
I fucking loved the Swamp Thing show when I was a kid. Loved it.
I wanted it to be good so bad because I was such a fan of the comic, and it's so, it looks kind of cool. Dick Durock's really great in it, but yeah, man, it's bad.
The Swamp Thing voice is actually what, like, I was like, I have to watch this. That voice is
going
to
bring your evil here.
Yeah.
I think it's just mind blowing that we had like between the two shows, like at least a dozen seasons of basically a theme park like byproduct.
Yeah.
And you get it when you watch those shows, especially the later seasons, because Superboy, the first season was very different. They recast Superboy in the second season. And as it goes, actually Bub, the guy who plays Bub in Day of the Dead, he plays Lex Luthor in the Superboy series. Yeah. It's evident. You're like, you're just shooting this to have something to shoot at an amusement park. Like, you don't even care anymore.
This is basically a tourism video.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you consider the Friday the 13th movies summer movies?
Summer movies?
I'd say so. Because it has that vibe of, like, at least for me anyway, like, you spent the day, like, hanging out, like swimming with your friends or something, and now you're all like sleeping over.
Well, that's the thing, is like they're all, well, maybe not all, but they're all based around summer camp.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, that's just kind of the vibe you get. Because like it kind of follows suit, right? Because like these have that summer feel, like everybody's swimming, everybody's out at camp, it's a summer thing. you know, the Halloween movies, it's literally in the fucking title.
Yeah.
Those feel like October. But I think those are the only two that are really like thematic like that, you know, because Nightmare on Elm Street is whatever. Like, it's just, it can happen whenever it wants to. And I don't think there is ever really like a mention of like, this happens at this time all the time.
Yeah.
School's in session. So it's during the school year. That's about it.
Yeah.
But like TV 38 always used to show the Friday the 13th movies, especially around Halloween, which was even weird to me as a kid because yes, they're horror movies, but they feel so summer to me. They are exactly that. Like, it's late at night. It's kind of still warm out. You get the windows open. It's quiet and dark and you're watching these movies.
Yep.
You're sitting in your room alone, like watching TV. Like,
Yeah, it's got that vibe. And I love that. Like the Coolidge Corner here movie theater, which is a great old theater. I think it's the oldest Art Deco theater still exists, is still in operation in America. But one of our two great sort of revival house movie theaters in the Boston area, along with the Brattle, every year for the last maybe 5 or 6 years, they have a summer outdoor movie series in this camp in the woods. And they always show Friday the 13th movies. So literally it's at a summer camp at night showing the Friday the 13th movies. And it's like, why doesn't every city have this every year? Like, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Thor pointed out, he watched these movies in summer as well, watching them on Joe Bob on TNT back in the day.
Yeah. And also as a kid, you can stay up late. You can watch stuff all night on a weeknight. So yeah, it definitely has that summer vibe.
I was gonna say our format's pretty much out the window, but do we want to throw some ratings?
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine.
Dude, don't worry about it.
let's throw a rating down. 1 through 10. I'll go first.
Can you give me an example of what's a 1 and what's a 10? Just so I know what
one is. Deathbed.
Okay.
10 is American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Or like The Exorcist, you know, like.
Okay, so Phantasm would be like an 8.
Yeah,
I go 7.5, but yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Ballpark. Okay.
TJ, War of the Gargantuas is definitely a 2. It's a 2.
One for each gargantua.
Yeah, it's War of the Gargantuas.
It's not my fault.
Oh, Hydre, I will, TJ.
It's not my fault. It's a bad movie. This, I probably got to go. I got to go 7 on this.
I could see that. I think I'm. I was going to go 6.5, but I think 7 is like a little bit better. We're always kind of in the same ballpark, but like.
Yeah.
What I was, you know, saying at the beginning of the episode, where like anything you expect in a Friday the 13th movie, you're gonna see in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's got all of the elements like distilled down into a movie. It's fun to watch. I enjoyed watching it. I regret not seeing it sooner than yesterday.
This one, cuts down some of the cheese that was in the previous movies.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ken, your thoughts? Rating?
I have a question too about what your highest rated Friday the 13th movie would be. just to put it in perspective. So if you need a little bit of time to think about that, but I'm in the same ballpark. I would say like a 6.5 or a 7. This, I will point out, is the first Friday the 13th movie that truly feels like an 80s movie to me. The others still feel very 70s. Even part 3, like with the disco theme song, and just it has this sort of 70s holdover. And this is the first one that feels like it's in the 80s, which to me is a huge bonus, because I so associate these movies with the 80s. And the other ones feel a little bit like Charlie Kaufman's Mother's Day, you know, like that kind of sleaze. I love it for that reason. It's the purest of the good Friday the 13th movies, meaning part 6 is really fun, but again, it's a little bit too self-aware and silly. with the James Bond opening and the, you know, he's a full zombie and Horshack, you know, highly entertaining, but not what I'm thinking of when I think like a Friday the 13th movie. So I would say, to me, this is the best of the sort of first half of classic Friday the 13th movies. And to your point, it has everything you want in that movie and that you sort of think of when you think of a Friday the 13th movie. So I'm putting, seven, saying that this is the sort of best of the first wave of Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah, no, this, like, had I seen this more, like, I would probably put this as my favorite because, like, you know, for that same reason, like,
yeah,
it's got it all. You know, I don't have the nostalgia like thing I can pin to it, so it'll bring it down for me. If I had to pick one, oh, good God! Like, I saw seven probably the most, like, as a kid.
Yeah.
So that's got the most, like, seven and eight. You know, Jason Takes Manhattan are the ones that, like, are probably the nearest and dearest to me, but I wouldn't say they're the best by far.
Right. Like, that's your nostalgia pick, like your comfort spot pick.
Yeah. No, if I had to pick one just on, like, Friday the 13th-ness, like, this, you know, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I guess this is the blueprint. Like, they've finally nailed, like, the process on this one. But I don't know, like, I'm a sucker for two.
TJ says two is his favorite, yeah.
Yeah.
Thor is saying six and four are his.
Yeah, two. The first one is kind of is what it is. It doesn't, I don't like rewatching it very much. It's the one that you, when you put it on, even though you know, you watch it and you go, this doesn't have any of the Friday the 13th stuff I want. It just doesn't. You know, and it's fine moving its own right. But yeah, this is the one I would say this is my favorite. Three, I really love. Just because it's so silly, like the 3D stuff's fun. You know, it gives us that first Jason in the mask. So I'd probably go four, six, three, two, one, five. And then seven and eight are the kind of movies that I would just put on if I'm doing other things. And it would be like sort of enjoyable background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The party movies.
I've done that plenty of times, like on Pluto and stuff. Like if I'm working, I just have them on.
Yeah, realistically, they're all party movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason Takes Manhattan is probably the most party of all of them, though. Just because of some of the wild shit that happens in it.
Yeah, I feel like this one's probably the least party movie because there's like peril in a family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not as like, you know, cheering on the scenes. And if you like this one, I would recommend Zito's other horror movies, especially The Prowler, which Savini did the special effects for. It has an interesting angle and story. The killer's very interesting. It's before everyone was trying to create a franchise killer where they're like, I'm going to create a character that's going to be in 12 movies. So it's like a one and done.
Dude,
it's got a mystery, like a little mystery to it. It reminds me quite a bit of Valentine. What's the Valentine's Day? My Bloody Valentine, that remake was actually very good as well. Speaking of remakes at the same time.
I saw that in the theater in the 3D. Fucking the shitty 3D glasses.
They were pushing 3D.
Yeah,
and that was good too.
That was like the 3D movie when all that was going on.
Yeah,
it's. Have you ever seen Part 3 in 3D?
No, only in the home video where like there's like a knife coming at the screen at you.
Yeah.
If anyone's ever shown in a theater near you in 3D and you can see a print, go. It's so fun. It's a whole different experience. It's so fun.
An eyeball fly at you.
Yeah, it's because it really is like a joke. It's like the old SCTV Dr. Tongues 3D movie where people, you know, they're like, "Let me have a drink."
Yeah,
like no, like just unnatural movements towards the camera.
Yep.
TJ says he worked in the theater. He hates three because he worked in the theater that constantly oversold it.
Yeah. Oh God.
I worked, this was my personal Vietnam. I worked at I worked at Regal when Harry Potter came out, the first like Harry Potter movies.
Oh,
I am traumatized to this. I had to break up a fight one day between two moms, like full on fist fight going at it. Like I'm holding them apart, like screaming into my radio. Like, yeah, yeah.
In the 3D, the Friday the 13th 3D would have been a pain in the ass in the theater too, because I think it still used the two projector system.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which is, as a projectionist, is a fucking nightmare.
I was gonna say, as an usher, I'm thinking of cleaning up all of those discarded like paper glasses at the end. Like,
oh yeah,
I am gonna have to sweep up every single one of these glasses that I'm having out. Like,
I always took mine out of the theater. Like, I would do. Like, I would keep them. Like, some movies had like branded ones, which were sick.
Yeah, but every now and then they would show stuff on TV in 3D, so it was good to have like 3D glasses on hand.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a different system though.
Oh, really? It's
a different stereoscope. Yeah, I actually have, where are they? So I have prescription distance glasses now that I'm old, but I had prescription distance blue and red like glasses.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
I had over glasses, blue and red ones for playing Call of Duty because they were in 3D for a little while.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3D not movies. The 3D
glaucoma glasses.
Terminator, yeah.
Dr. Jacoby. The 3D seeing an 80s 3D movie is a whole different thing because it's such a different experience than like an IMAX 3D movie or like a modern. It's just a totally different system. Yeah. Don't see Jaws 3D though. That even seeing that in 3D is not very fun.
Just don't see
Jaws 3D. Yeah.
Yeah. Amityville 3D. A little bit better because that movie is so incredibly twisted. There's so much incest in that movie.
I did not like the first Amityville.
No, I'm not a huge Amityville guy. I hate the Lutzes and I hate their story because they're just scumbags who didn't want to pay their
con
mortgage.
Artists.
Yeah, it's the same reason artists. I hate The Conjuring and hate the stuff with the Warrens. They're just
the Warrens are scum.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by them, so I can't not watch things about them.
Yeah. I love those stupid movies where they're like, we're all handsome and we're helping people. And then you see the actual Warrens and they're just like scumbag ghouls.
Yeah.
They look like Dr. Seuss characters.
Oh, they're awful. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I had a clip I posted on Instagram maybe around Halloween, and it was this, I can't remember the guy's name, but it was like one of the Warren's apprentices, like this guy that works with them. And he was one of the guys who was part of
their son-in-law did a lot of shit with
it. Might be him. He was one of the guys that worked with them on the entity case. And he's like, we have found demon ejaculate. And he's going on like totally. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you're garbage.
I gotta tell you though, like the first Conjuring movie, fucks. I love that movie.
That was a good movie. Yeah.
And I have been chasing that high with every Conjuring movie and have been let down every single fucking time.
Yeah, it's just knowing how like these people making like her like involved in their own story and being like making themselves the hero, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, well, like it's just like this most recent one where they like they're involved. Like all they did actually in that case was bring media attention to it and bounce.
Yeah.
That's all they did.
Yeah.
And those girls who were part of it, like have you ever seen the interviews with them later where they're like, oh yeah, we made that all up.
Yeah.
We totally made that up.
There was a Fox TV movie about that last Conjuring movie, like back in the 90s, early 90s. The
fucking Smurls.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was The Haunted, it was called. And it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. I'm sure it doesn't hold up, but yeah.
You know, I want to point out one ridiculous jump scare in Friday the 13th Part 4 that almost takes me out of the movie. Do you know which one it is?
No.
It's the murder where Jason crashes through the second story window.
Oh, yeah.
He pulls her out the window. And I'm like, really? No.
The sugar glass budget on this movie must have been through the roof. But I'm like, so many people go through windows in this movie.
Yeah.
Was he hanging on the like you know, like I can just picture the person looking and seeing this guy hanging from the windowsill or like up on the roof, like looking, like it just like, why the second story? The second story, because you don't expect it, I guess. You're like, but it's just when you stop for 2 seconds to think about it, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. What I think one of the more ridiculous things about this movie too is like the hammer that he throws against the wall.
Oh yeah. No, does he have an axe launching gun at one point? Because he fires an axe through the door.
Yeah.
Well, like, where did he get that axe from? He's walking through the house, sans axe. They lock themselves in the bedroom. He tears down the door with an axe.
Yeah. Like, do you have an axe in your house? I think I have one in my shed, maybe. But not in my house.
Eddie right there.
Yeah. We have a machete right here.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got one right here, but that's for, you know, that's a different aesthetic reason.
Purposes. This is an autographed machete.
Who's autographed that one? Ted White?
Steve Dash.
Uh-huh.
He played Jason in part two. He was one of the stuntmen for part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that axe comes out of nowhere. I was going to say, wouldn't it be like, it's just fucking hilarious if that was just completely unrelated to Jason, like, oh, that was actually in my favorite. Thank you.
Yeah.
There's some kind of horrible accident that launched this axe through the door and like, ends up killing this woman.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like corkscrew, I get it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it was there.
Yeah. But yeah, sometimes you're just like, who has these things in their house? I do want to point out maybe my favorite, I might have mentioned this last time, my favorite Friday the 13th remake is the second half of the first Equalizer movie. Because it literally, and they shot it here in Boston at a Home Depot not far from me. It's literally just Denzel Washington murdering people in a Home Depot with power tools for like 45 minutes.
I had a t-shirt fucking, I don't know, probably going on 20 years ago. And it was the mask. It was the hockey mask. And it was a pictograph. It was made up of all of the implements that Jason used throughout every movie to kill people. So there was like a weed eater, the guitar, the corkscrew. There was something else fucking ridiculous on it. I can't remember what it was, but it was
sleeping bag.
Like the dumbest shit.
Yeah, sleeping bag.
Yeah.
You know what's funny too? Sometimes I think about this, how, you know, we think Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, like we're like horror names. But if you put any other name on the same level that are just normal names, they sound silly for some reason. If you're like, oh no, it's Dave.
Yeah,
Dave. But it's like, that's not any sillier than Jason or Freddy. You're like, oh my God, it's Malcolm. Or like, Tim, it's Tim. You
know? It's just association.
You guys going to hear with Lewis Kruger?
Fucking Chucky?
Yeah. Yeah.
No one questions it. But if you said any other name people think is ridiculous, which is funny, or any other sporting equipment, like a guy in a catcher's mask or like any, it's no more ridiculous, but for some reason it seems completely silly.
He's got knives on his boot.
And the killer had a highlight scoop on his hand.
He's wearing a basketball jersey. He's got one of those golf hats.
Yeah. Really sharp cleats.
Or football helmet. How silly would it be if the killer had a football helmet? That's not any dumber than a hockey mask, but for some reason, if it's like, it's Tim in a football helmet.
Especially in the summertime. I mean, it's not even football season.
Yeah. Oh, God, he's horse powering me.
Some guy dresses as a tennis player.
That's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a movie called Night of the Dribbler where the killer has a basketball head.
There would be.
Tune in next week as we
watch. No, we won't.
It's pretty bad. That's a pretty unwatchable movie.
Next week is our Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Oh, can you say what movie you're doing?
Or is it a surprise? Yeah, we're going to do Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah. We usually, like, we have two guests on next week. When they come on, we usually pick the crappiest of the crappy movies. Like,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
And like, I think last time we just we broke even ourselves.
Yeah. Was it Elves?
No, what did we watch last? I mean, we've watched like
Velocipaster.
Velocipaster, Zombievers.
Yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't specifically Christmas for them.
No, no. Yeah, they're no. They're not our Christmas guests. No.
Okay.
No, actually, no. Last time we had him on, we did Godzilla King of the Monsters specifically because we couldn't stand to do another shitty movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There's a lot of shitty Christmas movies. Santa Slay with Goldberg as a killer Santa.
I love that movie. I loved it.
The Jack Frost movie.
Oh, oh, oh.
I mean, elves. Elves. Goldberg? Wow.
Yes.
Is Santa in that movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
There's at least one thing wrong with this situation.
A giant plot point revolves around curling.
Yeah. It's an incredibly violent movie that weirdly feels wholesome, like a Fox kids show. Yeah.
It is like if a Hallmark movie was made by, like, I don't know,
Eli Roth
or Wes Craven.
Yeah.
I was going to say we can do a little bit of crapshoot. You know, if we want to do that, because there's definitely stuff I could talk about. There's the Rob Reiner thing we can talk about, which is crazy. Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. I mean,
Peter Green yeah. just died too.
Just Saturday, the crapshoot is where we just kind of talk about anything we want. It's when we start kind of wrapping up. I just watched Saturday night. I was watching Spinal Tap 2. I hadn't seen it before. And I was, I remember thinking, while I was watching it, like, oh man, I really, really love fucking Rob Reiner. Like, he's so good. That's a dude I would love to like talk to, like interview someday. And with like hours later, I see the story, like he's been murdered.
Yeah,
by his own son.
By most likely his own son. Yeah. Wife too. His wife too.
Yeah.
Awful. Awful.
He came to the prominence as, you know, Meathead and All in the Family, but like the movies this dude directed, like you
forget.
Yeah. I forgot he directed Misery.
Yeah.
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 Misery, Princess Bride, Stand By Me, A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Like linchpin movies in popular culture, and not just one, like six.
No,
Spinal Tap. I mean, yeah.
He did it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And all very different. I can't think of two of his movies that you're like, well, here's a Rob Reiner movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not like, you know, Wes Anderson. We're like, everyone's going to be cutesy and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He went Spinal Tap, The Sure Thing.
Yeah.
Stand By Me. Like,
yeah.
Princess Bride.
Cool, for God's sake.
What? You can't want to see a dead body.
Yeah.
And he had to turn down Shawshank Redemption because he made the movie North instead. But part of it was, I mean, he didn't want to be the guy that adapts all the stories in different seasons.
You know? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But he really is almost single-handedly responsible for like the sort of mainstream cinema of Stephen King. He created Castle Rock. It's named after you. Yeah.
One of the creators of Castle Rock. Crazy.
God damn.
Yeah, no, like that is like one of those ones, you, like, at least for me anyway, you don't think about it gonna hit, you know, being something that's gonna hit you hard, but like, fuck, like I haven't stopped thinking about it since last night.
Like, well, because that's kind of the thing, is like you go, oh, Rob Reiner, yeah, he's a great director, and then if you stop and think about the movies that he's made, you're like, these are
classics.
They're classics. Yeah. Like, these are very important movies.
Yeah.
Every one of his movies is somebody's favorite movie. Like I can't say that for every director, and I can definitively say it for him. And it's such a horrifically violent, shocking, awful thing. Like normally when someone dies, I'm one of the first people who's like posts like a memory or celebration of their life. And I couldn't even today. I'm like, it seems inappropriate. I'm like, it's so horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, like a lot of like the stuff I've seen from like other directors and actors is just like a picture of him. Like that's it. No words or anything. Just because
There are none.
Yeah.
Like, what do you say?
Yeah.
And I will say he's one of those guys that I've been lucky to talk to a ton of people in the industry over the years. And he's one of those people I've never heard a single person say remotely close to a single bad thing about. Not close.
I'm going to take it somewhere very briefly. You know who did say something negative about him?
Of course. Yeah, of course he did. Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Shit in the country. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a piece of shit who can't take when people are critical of him, and he's a friggin' syphilitic brained, self-absorbed sack of shit.
Like, how are you going to turn this absolute tragedy into something about yourself?
You full fuckwad.
And it's also a person who actually created things, has had positive effects on people's lives, and that people are better off for him existing. You can't say that about the other guy. Not a single person.
Yeah.
Not even him.
Also behind like a lot of the funding for like the legal fees for the lawsuit for like the gay marriage.
He walked the walk his whole life. I mean, he put his money, you know, where his beliefs were, which I completely respect. Like, he was so, he's one of those guys where, like, even if, I mean, I happen to agree with him just about everything, but even if he didn't, you're like, he articulates his argument, always has. He's always been like, here's why I think this, and I'm going to put my own money behind it because I truly believe this thing.
Yeah. Which is unusual as hell.
Yeah.
Especially
and in as that. A Nepo baby that actually worked hard and made stuff without really, believe it or not, he never really capitalized on his father's name that much when he was coming up. He sort of made his own way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, because look at the reputation that he earned for himself. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, he backed it up with solid work after solid work after solid work.
Yeah. I mean, North was probably his only bomb. And, you know, that movie, he made it because Alan Zweibel, who was an original SNL writer, wrote a novel. And it's an adaptation of the novel. And it's a weird novel. And they've been friends for decades. And he was like, let's try this, you know. And he took a swing with that one. It doesn't quite work. But I like that he was doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. He tried to do it. Is it, you know, testament on its own. Like,
yeah.
Such a huge fucking loss, man. That's just such a bummer.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of anyone else with a career like him. Anyone.
Yeah.
Filmography or anything.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even mention the Princess Bride.
Yeah, Princess Bride.
Yeah. That's like that alone could get you in the door.
That's
like,
been one of my favorite movies since I watched it.
Yeah.
It's so good. That's a timeless movie that holds up so well. I've never met a person who saw The Princess Bride and did not love the, not even not like it, not that loved it. Everybody,
because it is. So if you take it into the realm of like, okay, fantasy movie, we'll just like blanket fantasy movie. It's got everything in it in like the perfect amount. Mm-hmm. You know, there's your romance, your action, your adventure. There's some scary moments, like. It's complete. It's a complete movie. You cannot, no notes, none.
Yeah.
And I think what he's really great at is every character has a full character, right? So like Princess Bride could have very easily, I mean, I love Monty Python movies, but it could have easily gone that route where a character exists as a joke. So like Inigo Montoya, you know, you're like, he could just be this guy who's just trying to find, but like, he gives Manny Patinkin's character this such sad backstory and true motivation. And so every time he says, you know, like, I'm going to think of, like, it's funny, but you're also like, yeah, like it.
Yeah.
It's more dying than it needs to be.
Yeah. And stuff like, my name is Inigo Montoya. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
It makes it into a true thing.
The my favorite Inigo Montoya moment is when he is shoulder checking the door so hard, like you can see Manny Patinkin like just bashing this fucking door, screaming for Fezzik, like Fezzik, I need you, like, and you feel it, like fucking
And Andre the Giant's so good in it, like he uses him so well, he uses everybody so well in that movie.
The only character that you could probably be like, oh, this is like a write-off joke is Billy Crystal's character.
Yes.
But even then.
He's good. He's great in that.
Yeah.
But they give him Carol Kane to play off. So he ends up having, you go, oh, he has a life. He has a wife. They're fighting like this. It's more than just a, like, I'm an old Jewish guy character. I'm Billy Crystal. It's what I do, you know? But like with Harry Met Sally, I'm not a super fan of that movie, but iconic movie. Like, that movie was massive. That's the movie that kind of made Billy Crystal like an A-list star.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those movies, even if you've never seen it, you know the movie just because from all the cultural like references.
Yeah, all the references, for sure. Yeah. It's, yeah. Or like Stand By Me, which, you know, the Stephen King book novella is good, but he makes that great, like the structure, you know, even making the hood characters, like the Kiefer Sutherland gang, like they're all characters. Like some of them you feel bad for, they're like bullied into that, or they're like, you get why they're like that, you know. They're not just like an arch villain. It's not the Sandlot, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, because he turned that from a coming of age story into the coming of age story.
Yeah. Even The Sure Thing, which, you know, is a on the surface, a pretty dumb teenage sex comedy. It has this depth to it that other movies of that genre do not have.
Yeah.
I still quote that movie pretty much every week. Two things I quote from that movie is when Tim Robbins, I think his name is, it's not Cary Grant, it's I forget his character's name, but it's like Fred Astaire or something, and he's like, I'm Fred Astaire, but not the one that's dead. And it's like this, because he's supposed to be this kind of lame guy. And then there's this other scene where Cusack, his roommate's with a girl, so he has like a thing on the door, but he has to sneak into the room to like get a postcard. So he walks in with his hand over his eyes, but when he looks at the bed, they're under the covers, but there's like legs sticking out and these weird, like, you know, it's very weird. And Cusack goes, that's new. And then just walks out. And so, yeah, it's great.
I was going to say, we bumped everybody out.
If you want a pick me up, I think it's from last year.
Okay.
What is it? Billy and Dom Eat the World, or Dom and Billy Eat the World. It's Dom and Billy, like the fucking Merry and Pippin.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Just traveling the world, experiencing cultures, eating different foods. Like it's the most just like comfortable. Sit on the couch, watch these two just fucking charming people enjoy shit.
All right. I can get up with that.
One season, I think. And like I said, I think it came out last year.
It's like Somebody Feed Phil kind of, where it's just like positively like traveling the world and complimenting people.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's so good.
I've been watching Leguizamo Does America, which is kind of the same thing. Like him traveling around, like,
oh yeah,
looking at like Latino culture in different
cities. I love Leguizamo. He's such a solid dude.
Yeah, he is. That's another dude I would love to talk to someday, like, you know, in a panel or something.
Well, he's had a hell of a fucking career.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's the highs and the lows.
Did you see what was the Christmas movie that's basically Die Hard with Santa Claus with David Harbour?
Oh, Violent Night.
Violent Night. Yeah. Leguizamo so good in that as the villain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good movie. They're making a sequel to that, too.
I liked him a lot in The Menu.
Yes. Yeah, that's
he's a really even good movie. In Spawn. Like, he's good in anything. Just blank
he's good. He's great in John Wick. Like,
I loved his one-man shows on HBO, like, when I was younger.
That's why he made his name. I mean, he wrote and produced those things himself off-Broadway and got noticed because he's such, like, a unique talent, you know?
Yeah.
Fucking top tier. Tu Wong Fu.
Yeah.
Tu Wong Fu's great.
It's amazing. I love that movie.
And I would recommend the Albert Brooks documentary that Rob Reiner made, and the documentary about Super Dave Osborne, who's Albert Brooks's brother, Albert Einstein, is also like the two of those together are so good. And, you know, it would be a little sad because you realize that, you know, both Bob Einstein and Rob Reiner are gone, but they're so funny and joyful and like true friends of like just like admirers of them, of their friends and their talent. And they're just so good to watch.
Yeah.
I saw the new Silent Night, Deadly Night remake the other night.
I think I blacked out the fact that they made one.
Actually wasn't bad.
I mean, it. Yeah. Silent Night, Deadly Night is not
good.
It's not good.
No,
it's not good.
No, it isn't.
It's okay. It, you know, it's your origin slasher genre shit, but like it's, you know, required viewing basically, but it's not an amazing movie.
Yeah, Better Watch Out is a better one, or I forget what the other title of it is, the other Killer Santa movie. Black Christmas is amazing. But there's a I think it's called Better Watch Out, it was called, but it was like the same year as Silent Night, Deadly Night. The DVD is amazing. John Waters shows it every year at his house for Christmas, and he does a commentary on the DVD, and it's really, because John Waters is funny, but also like a true film scholar and like really good at speaking about movies. I can't remember that Synapse put it out. But it's kind of like if Silent Night, Deadly Night was good, like was thoughtful, like it has this really interesting. I mean, part two is worth watching because it's stupid and it's entertaining. But.
There's a Garbage Day reference in the remake.
There's another Santa Claus slasher movie. It's Italian, French, something. I want to say Joe Bob covered, not too long ago.
Thor said it was fun.
There's that strange, what's it called? Strange Cargo or something. I think it's like a Norwegian movie from a few years back with they capture Santa Claus and it's like a monster. If you've seen that one.
No.
Early 2000s. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
What's it called? Like something Cargo or Strange Cargo or look it up.
Yeah.
I also really like Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 and 5.
I realized they went up that high.
I didn't either.
They're really interesting. They kind of started doing like a Halloween 3 type thing where they just became sort of weird Christmas set anthology horror movies. And the fourth one is about this like Wiccan coven of witches and oh my God, what's his name?
Rare Export, the Santa movie?
Rare Export, that's it, yeah. Rare Export's really great. Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 has, oh my God, why am I forgetting his name? His brother is in Happy Days. He's an ice cream man.
Clint Howard.
Clint Howard's in it, and he's really creepy, and it's this really interesting sort of Wiccan feminist winter solstice movie that Screaming Mad George did the special effects for, so they're like really surreal and like society. And then part five is called The Toy Maker, and it stars Mickey Rooney as this guy who makes basically like a robot son and who goes nuts. He's like a toy it's actually pretty interesting.
All right,
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah,
four and five are fun. Three is dumb, two is extra dumb but entertaining. One is, you don't need to watch one if you watch two, because again, it's just the highlights of part one in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rare Exports is great. That's a movie that I don't get why more people, like, it got a little bit of attention when it first came out, but it doesn't seem like it comes up every year.
Below the radar.
Yeah. Well, let's check that out.
Yeah. You know what I'm not excited for, which just kind of came out, is Troll 2.
Yeah. I didn't see the first one, the Netflix version.
Yeah, he did.
No, we saw Troll
2.
No, it's got nothing to do with like the cheesy Troll 2 movie.
No,
it's like a Norwegian like kaiju movie during like
giant. Oh yes, the giant troll. Yes, I've seen clips of that first one. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I thought we did watch that.
Did we? I don't thinks we did Troll Hunter for sure. That's like the documentary one. Like,
yeah.
No, we didn't. I don't think.
Oh, God. Troll. Yeah. It just looks terrible.
Yeah. The teaser is like a troll, like lifting up the roof of like this Norwegian nightclub and like pulling people out. Like,
yeah.
It looks crazy.
Have you seen Deadly Games?
No.
It's a French movie from 1989, and it's Home Alone as a horror movie before Home Alone.
I have seen that.
It's really good. Did you like it?
Yeah. It was okay. Yeah. It was like fucking something Paranoel.
Yeah.
Oh, they did.
You did see that.
I've watched it with you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it on one of our. Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
Christmas Evil. That's the John Waters commentary for.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not that one. No. Yeah. No, I know. We did watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Christmas Evil?
Didn't they do a double feature of Christmas Evil and Paranoel or whatever?
Maybe.
Christmas Evil is the good Silent Night, Deadly Night to
me. Well, it's just like, you know, what is the best version of that fucking first Christmas Tales from the Crypt episode? You know?
Yeah. That's tough. I think I'd go with the Amicus, the 70s one, because the 70s-ness of it is like extra creepy for me. It has like a Clockwork Orange vibe.
Oh, okay.
I will say they do give like a 70s like Grindhouse vibe to the new Silent Night, Deadly Night, which I did enjoy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I will say nothing is scarier than the phone calls in the original Black Christmas. Just the phone calls alone. Freak me out.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
You know who made it, right?
What's that?
You know who made Black Christmas?
I don't remember.
He made another Christmas movie.
Really?
Called The Christmas Story.
Oh, yes!
Bob Clark. Same guy who made Black Christmas, made A Christmas Story.
I have heard that before.
God damn.
Yeah.
Paranoel activity. That's a good one, TJ. I was saying, it's not too late to call an audible on next week. We could do Black Christmas.
We could.
The original Black Christmas is really good. The remake's okay. Although, again,
technically no monster per se, but.
Well, Billy's kind of a monster. And there's no satisfying ending. That's the thing I love about that movie. It's like. Whatever that thing was,
it's
still out
just
there,
builds tension and just never releases.
Yeah, and the remake was okay, but again, they did that thing where they tried to explain the killer way too much and gave it this super complicated backstory. And if you want to do a monster Christmas movie, I honestly would recommend Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 or 5. They're nuts.
Fuck it, let's do that.
All right,
let's do 4.
All right. Thor, if you're still watching, we're calling an audible on next week's movie. Silent Night, Deadly Night, Quattro.
Yeah.
It's like nothing you've ever seen before. And Brian Yuzna made it, who did Reanimator. And
really?
Produced Reanimator. Yeah. And Society. Yeah. It's a Brian Yuzna movie.
Thor said he's in. All right. We got to tell Alex.
Yeah. No, don't.
We're going to be wearing onesies.
Excuse me?
One onesie for everybody?
Yeah. We're all getting into one.
Speaking of society.
Yeah.
You got some body horror. You're going to do the shunting for Christmas? Speaking of Corey Feldman, to bring it full circle, so good in Gremlins. Good in Gremlins.
I forgot he's in there.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the huge movies in Gremlins, Goonies. Lost Boys. I know I'm
Stand
forgetting.
By me.
Stand By Me. Yeah, we just talked about that.
Dream a Little Dream.
Dream.
Gremlins, one of the best Christmas horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yep. We have done it on the show.
First Christmas special, yeah.
Yep.
All right, I think it's a good place to wrap it up. We've been yammering on long enough.
Yeah.
We'll do some plugs. We'll throw some words of wisdom at people, and we'll get out of here.
All right. Yeah, we'll do that.
Ken, let folks know where they can get at you on social media and all that stuff.
Yeah, tvguidancecounselor.com or I'm at Kenneth W. Reed on all the social media stuff, or TV Guidance Counselor. Next week's Christmas episode, and the week after that, I do my solo year interview one, so and answer like listener questions and stuff. So if people want to write in,
yeah, be sure to check out Ken's show, TV Guidance Counselor.
Yeah,
if you dig us, you're gonna dig Ken. So go check him out.
Yeah, he's better than us.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's different. It's different. Different style, different format.
Yeah.
I will be at Indiana Comic Con in Indianapolis, June 4th through the 6th. And then Tampa Bay Comic Con, that's September 5th through the 7th, I believe, or 4th through the 6th again. That's all we got booked right now for next year, but we will have more stuff coming up. I was looking at some stuff we can talk about when we're not recording.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can check out our friends at the Bull and Bee Meadery. This is why we have a producer.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been drinking mead?
We've been drinking PBR.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
I don't drink, but I like the idea of mead because I'm a big fan of honey.
It's delicious. For the promo code.
Yeah, our buddies actually have a meadery.
Yeah. You can go to thebullandbee.com. You can use code MONSTERMEAD for $5 off your order. We threw a Halloween party for them, you know, this past Halloween, and they made a blood red velvet cake flavored mead.
Nice.
That was so good.
Yeah.
And we were all walking around with red lips all night from the red mead.
I don't think they're ever going to top that lemon lavender one.
Yeah. They do one every summer. It's nice. The lemon lavender mead. It's like bright purple. It looks so cool when you're drinking it.
Yeah.
Like peeling ale. go to the Bull and Bee. I highly recommend it. Everything they make is delicious. And Alex will be here next week, actually.
Yeah, so we'll be pimping it real hard.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to be up to our neck in mead. It's like up to our livers anyway in mead. You can check us out at
our website, www.bigdumbmonsters.com. You want to work with us? You want to suggest things for the show, movies we should watch, beer we should drink, ways we can improve the show? We want to hear it. Email us, bigdumbmonsters@gmail.com. You can find us on Slasher, the all-horror social network. We are Big Dumb Monsters Podcast on there. And occasionally, not very often, you can find us logged into our Steam account as Big Dumb Monsters.
You can check us out on Instagram and Threads at big_dumb_monsters. You should be watching the show when it streams live every Monday night at 7:45 on Twitch and YouTube. We are at Big Dumb Monsters on those platforms. You can check out our merch store at tpublic.com. You can search for the Big Dumb Monster store there. That's all we got.
That's it.
That's what we got.
That's all. That's a good amount. That's a good
amount. Yeah. That's what we have to split. He has to remember three. I have to remember three.
That's why you have to go with us.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to have a list that we would read off of. But now we've got it up. Yeah. We've got it up here now.
Really, this is always great when you're by.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, no, thank you for asking me. Happy to do it anytime. I love talking movies.
We'll have to. We're going to get out of the Friday the 13th series next time you're on. We'll pick something
Saturday fun. The 14th. You're going to have me on about.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll stick with day themes. We'll do Valentine's Day.
There we go. Yeah.
April Fool's Day. Yeah.
Graduation Day. You know, April Fool's Day is a good flick.
It is. Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
All right. Well, we're going to give you guys some words of wisdom and then head on out of here.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Don't let ghoulies eat your ass.
And never sleep in a deathbed.
Bye.